Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. We're still going to be on the themes of love, compassion, gratitude, and as a concept, along with that, this quality or this quality of heart-mind connected, which the Japanese have, and which I mentioned in my New Year's program, Kukuru. So we've heard some really wonderful interviews about love and compassion, and of course, love and compassion brings us to gratitude. And so all these words and some of the stories that have been told by the previous interviews have been really along these lines. Today, Siddheshwari, a Reiki master from the East Bay area of San Francisco, is going to be with us, and her theme is going to be gratitude today. So I want to welcome you, Siddheshwari, to the radio show.
Hi, thank you very much, Phyllis.
You're welcome. She's a little shy, I guess. Siddheshwari and I have known each other for a very long time. And she's very active in the Reiki Alliance and also has her own very stimulating Reiki practice at home. So, Siddheshwari, could you share with us how you met Reiki and... just a little bit of your Reiki story.
Sure. It started for me with our daughter, who at the time was 2 years old, which is now 24 years ago. And she had had colds and ear infections from the time she was 2 months old. And we had tried one thing after another. We started with Western medicine, and they were doing the antibiotics, and after several rounds of antibiotics, the pediatrician said, oh, well, let's, you know, we'll do a few more rounds of antibiotics, and if that doesn't work, we'll have to put tubes in her ears. And I calculated that at 6 months of age, the possibility of our daughter undergoing general anesthesia. So at that point, we left Western medicine, tried Eastern medicine, tried homeopathy, back to Western medicine. We kept doing round robin from the time she was 2 months old until she was two years old. And nothing worked. And at that point, we had a friend who was a nurse who worked with a little baby and who had second degree Reiki. She gave our daughter, Janaki is her name, a series of Reiki treatments, four treatments. She also gave my husband a series of Reiki treatments, because he'd had asthma since he was an infant. And I basically got jealous and felt left out. I needed Reiki treatment. And at that point, I'd been a nurse for 16 years and just could not find a job that satisfied me. I was always felt uncomfortable in the nursing role. And my first Reiki treatment, my inner response was, oh, God, this feels so good and so nurturing. This is what I went into nursing for. I've got to learn this. And I asked the practitioner how to learn Reiki, and she didn't know how to get in touch with her Reiki master. And so I just let it lie for a bit, but in my heart was really wanting to learn this thing. And about 2 months later, a friend of mine called me, and she had had a Reiki class recently and said that in a few days was going to be a weekend Reiki class. I got all excited, and I called a friend of mine on the East Coast to hear about this Reiki master, who was Krishni Borang, and also Patricia Ewing. Because Patricia was going to be coming to the Bay Area like a month later. And just her description of the two, she said they're both very good, but just with her description of the two, I felt that Krishni would be better for me. So I took my Reiki class that weekend with Krishni and loved it.
Wow. I don't think I really knew that you had been initiated by Krishni Bharay.
Yeah, first and second degree with Krishni.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah.
So I think I've lost you a little bit.
Okay. I'm here.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into about what happened and all of that, but I knew I loved Reiki immediately and asked for a second, when can I have second degree, and, just went on from there.
You have time. You can tell whatever you feel comes out.
Well, I actually didn't even know that Reiki could heal, because the treatment that Neil and Janaki had did not show any dramatic improvement.
Uh-huh.
Looking back, I see, years later, I see what happened. And one with Janaki, it's clear to me now that very soon after that, we met up with a chiropractor whom Janaki saw and who diagnosed Janaki with candida, this low-grade systemic yeast infection that undermines the immune system, among other things, and with allergies. And she put her on this very, very strict diet, and it was the first thing that clearly worked. So I felt that Reiki led us to a path for her that was more than just a magical cure, that it was, she needed to change her eating habits and a way of life. And in fact, even beyond that, as time went on, she was on this very, Janaki was on this very strict diet for 2.5 years. Not even fruit or fruit juice.
Wow, that must have been hard as a child.
Well, I think she didn't know better in certain ways, and we were so clear. I was very clear. I had spent, too many nights dealing with her illness.
Uh-huh.
I was very clear, and, I think since we were clear, she was clear.
Uh-huh.
Then as time went on, the diet changed, and she could have a little bit of fruit, and then she could have more and more of these foods. And then it got to be a struggle among the three of us. I could feel it in my bones when she was beginning to get sick and had too much of these foods that she could have some of but not too much of.
Right.
Neil, on the other hand, had allergies as an infant and suffered the emotional impact of that, so wanted her to have, whatever she wanted. So we had some there, yeah. I felt like the mean old witch. and I felt conflicted. So actually, when I would put my foot down, there was a certain amount of anger, because I was angry that I had to put my foot down. And so it was not a good scene. And I think it was the chiropractor suggested at some point when Janaki was, 8 or 10, that Janaki start learning to make the decision for herself and check in with her own body and see whether it's okay for her to have an apple today, or okay for her to have some wheat today, or whatever it was that she wanted. And of course, all this time she's receiving lots of Reiki, and I'm giving myself lots of Reiki all these years. So from the time she's 2 till she's 8 or 10, so she's 6 or 8 years of all this Reiki. And I feel that this wisdom from the chiropractor was part of the Reiki, and that it helped Janaki develop her intuition, it helped me learn to develop boundaries of where I'm to go as a parent and where I'm not to go as a parent, and helped us to separate a little bit, you know, my daughter and me, in a healthy way. So it helped our relationship, and it helped me to learn about boundaries. So I feel that rather than a magical cure at age two, we developed so much more, so many more gifts out of that whole process than we would have if she'd had a magical cure.
Great. Mm-hmm. And how did your Reiki, during these years then, how did your Reiki practice develop?
Well, for that time period, I think I gave myself lots of mental healings. I didn't do full treatments on myself every day. That wasn't something I remember. I don't know what Krishna actually teaches. Who knows for sure? But I, you know, what the memory is, God knows. But I remember saying, and you can do Reiki on yourself. And I organized classes for her. And certainly in those classes, we did spend some time doing treatments on ourselves. But I didn't remember hearing, you should do your, you know, give yourself a full treatment every day. So I didn't do that. But I gave myself Reiki every day, for sure. I mean, especially mental healings, emotional healings, and certainly spot treatments of Reiki. And if something big happened, if I was sick, if I had hurt myself, I would certainly give myself Reiki treatment. So it was very much part of my life. And Janaki, of course, got lots of Reiki, and she had Reiki every night because she had trouble sleeping. Mm-hmm. So I would sit by her bed and send her treatments every night. And actually, after about a year and a half of that, when she got sick, instead of being sick for 6 days, she was sick for 1.5 or 2 days.
Wow, that's great.
The same progression that she had always had, but compressed into a shorter time period.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Great. So when did you decide to take second degree, and what led to that?
Well, this was unusual. When I decided to take the first degree class, it was a spontaneous class. Krishni was not originally planning to teach a class, but I guess a couple of people had asked for it, and so she said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll teach a class. And then I came, and the other two people who were going to take the class weren't there, so it was a one-on-one class, a Saturday and a Sunday, and then Krishni was moving to England the next day. And I loved Reiki so much, and I was saying to her, well, you know, what about second degree? Like, what's next? And she told me about second degree and how much it cost. And, you know, my mouth dropped open at $500. And she told me about Reiki Master, $10,000. And my mouth dropped open even wider. And I totally dismissed the possibility of ever becoming a Reiki Master. But the whole thing about second degree, she said, well, we'll see how the weekend goes. We'll see how things go. And I had no healing reaction, no untoward reaction. I just felt great, and it felt right to both of us. I actually had it the same weekend, and that's not how she usually teaches, and it's not the way I teach. You know, I see her as following the usual guidelines, and then if the energy says something different on occasion, she follows that. And she did that weekend, and I think it felt totally right to me, because Janaki, for instance, would not have been able to tolerate hands-on Reiki. But I could sit by her bed and send her Reiki, and she'd fall asleep in 10 minutes.
Great.
So, Yeah. And then I organized classes for Krishni, because she had moved to England the next day, and I was afraid that I was going to forget the symbols and, you know, so forth and so on. So I organized classes for her. I loved Reiki. I loved her, and I wanted to double-check myself. I started organizing
classes. Right.
I started organizing classes for her. Yeah.
So you are a Reiki master, so somehow that changed.
That did. And that's another whole little... Krishni stopped coming back to the United States, and by that time I had taken a business class because I knew I really did not like nursing. It was just not my thing. And I really wanted to be doing Reiki and needed income. So I took a business course because I thought I needed to know something because I knew absolutely nothing. And in it, we were told to interview 26 small business owners. And so I wanted some of them to be Reiki masters. And my friend on the East Coast, who was a Reiki master, Carol Crum, the doula.
Yeah.
You might know her.
Yeah.
Yes.
She gave me Chelsea's name and a couple of other people, and Chelsea and I connected on the phone, Chelsea Van Konis. And she and I connected on the phone immediately. And so, and people were asking for classes. Once, you know, Krishni stopped coming, people were asking for classes. And so, since I had connected so well with Chelsea, I started organizing classes for Chelsea. And then it just evolved from there. And I remember, actually, the moment that I started thinking, oh, maybe I really could be a Reiki master. I looked up so highly. I thought of her so highly and thinking she's so far beyond me that I couldn't possibly be as good as she is. And I remember her sitting on a table at a class, sitting on a Reiki table, talking to the students in the class, telling about how she thought the same thing of you, Phyllis, you know, that, you know, there's no way she could possibly be a Reiki master. And then somewhere along the line, it changed, and she realized that Reiki masters are human beings, and they're not necessarily realized beings, and that somehow she felt that she actually could do that. And I'm totally reconstructing what she said. I don't remember anymore the words, but I just remember the feeling of, oh, so maybe it really is possible for me. But so that's what changed things for me.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long have you been a master?
19 years.
19 years. Wow. That's great. Good for you.
I've been practicing 24.
Wow. That's amazing. So when I approached you about being interviewed, you decided that you felt drawn to talk about gratitude. So I'm just wondering where that came from. Do you have a story, or do you have a sense of why that was the theme that you connected to?
Well, the funny thing is that I was actually feeling more drawn toward love.
Uh-huh.
And that's because I've been working so much with the topic of love, and realizing that for pretty much all of my life, I've been trying to do things right and be good enough in order to receive love.
Uh-huh.
However, gratitude to me is very... So all of this is going to be completely spontaneous at this point.
Well, no. I mean, I can make a mistake. So somehow I thought your theme was gratitude, but I can change in midstream.
Okay, and so can I. And
okay, folks, we're into love.
Gratefully so.
Yeah, thank you. Speaking of gratitude.
Well, I think they're also fairly intimately connected. I
yes.
just thought so much about gratitude. And I do, since we are talking about gratitude, I do, there's been tears to my eyes. I remember my mother talking about how she spends all day thinking of gratitude and things that she's grateful for. And I think that's a pretty good teaching. So... I think it's something, and I have done a practice. For a couple of years, I would write in my in my journal each night, you know, three things or five things that I was grateful for, just to shift my mind from, oh, I need this, and oh, I'm scared about that, and oh me, oh my, into recognizing the blessings. I've had there were many years of feeling insecure and anxious, and I felt like that practice of gratitude shifted me into a place of feeling secure. So,
it's a great practice. I've done it myself, and it really gets me out of sort of looking at the past and looking at the future with fear and being more present in where I am now. Yeah. Which is great. And I feel that when I am in the present, I'm actually more open for love, because I'm not looking somewhere else to find some sign of satisfaction, because I'm there and I can just receive the love that's around me. And I'm just wondering if that was a bit of your experience also, or did you have a different one?
I would say that that states it pretty well. That it put me, I guess my word is, into a feeling of safety, and when I'm feeling safe, I'm feeling present. And I think the feeling of being present is also the feeling of love, or is the experience of love. You know, when I think of love, I think there's a tendency to think of love. Certainly I've had this tendency, as something that I give and something that I receive. And I think actually it's a state of being,
mm-hmm.
state of being present, rather than a give and take kind of thing. I mean, there is give and take, but it's not an object.
Right. I think that's a very good point, because quite often we do treat it like an object. Like if somebody makes you, if you're angry at someone, then you take your love away, like it was some ball or something that you could just grab and, you know, take away from them, and then they wouldn't feel it anymore.
Right.
And that's not my experience. And in fact, the more connected I am to people, the more that dynamic happens, where I kind of want to take it away because I'm vulnerable, but then I want to give it back. And it is a little bit like a ping pong ball. But I think there's another step that we get to in our practice of Reiki, which is to recognize that it can be a constant, and how it's expressed is different.
Yeah.
Would that be relevant to your experience?
That would be totally relevant. And this takes me in part to the work I'm moving into now with Reiki, is working with parents and babies and helping them bond when they've had difficulties.
Wow.
Because the baby is born preemie, or has been in the hospital, or because the baby is colicky, or because there was difficulty with breastfeeding, or something that where there's anxiety, worry, whatever, that gets in the way of those nice, warm, fuzzy feelings. And that's my decision to start working in this area came from my heart, and I think my heart is doing that partly to heal some stuff in myself, because I was born premature, and also because my daughter was colicky and was crying day and night. And it brings tears to my eyes still, the difficulty of that time. And Neil was able to just be present with her when she was crying, and I couldn't, partly because I was breastfeeding. She was a slow weight gain baby. She was crying all the time, and I kept feeling something was wrong, and there was something wrong with me, and I somehow had to fix it. And so I had, I think, a lot more anxiety and frustration that got in the way of the feeling of love, that warm, fuzzy feeling. What I'm realizing right now, in more recent weeks, is that the love was absolutely constant. I was looking for what would help her. I tried different doctors. I tried a lactation consultant. I tried whatever I knew at the time to get the help that I needed. And to me, that's love.
Right.
Even if I was, you know, it's like the anxiety and the frustration were a haze over the love. But boy, that love is, what's the word? It's unmovable. There's no way it can go away. So
what do you think happens then with some people or some mothers who really can't seem to bond with their children? Because it seems that this maternal love that you are just speaking about, that's consistent underneath the caring and the concern and sometimes resulting in anxiety, that sometimes it doesn't feel like that's there in some mothers and children. And since you're working in that field now, I find that quite fascinating. You know, what's your strategy and why do you think this happens? And, you know, do you have theories about this?
Whatever theories they are definitely theories. And it's, I just know from my experience with Janaki that I do feel that the bonding process was not very good because of the anxiety, because I didn't have enough support and I didn't have the clarity. And probably because of my own experience of being a preemie and my mother not being around, you know, 24/7.
Uh-huh.
So that I didn't have the underlying support to support me in, you know, from the inside.
Right.
In being with Janaki in the best way possible and bonding with her the way I would like to have bonded. I have, so the things that I use now with parents are, I do teach them the cues, the infant cues, how to know when a baby wants to do something, doesn't want to do something, is happy, is not happy, something beyond crying so that you can maybe catch something even before it goes into frantic crying. And I teach infant massage so that there is a bonding process that happens just with that physical touch, especially with a respectful and attuned touch. You know, attuned meaning I'm looking at the baby for cues. Is this baby really into this or not? If the baby get into it, I stop. If the baby, you know, and I might only have to pause for a few seconds. But then when the baby looks at me and seems ready, I can continue. Mm-hmm. So that develops a bond and it develops a confidence in the mother,
mm-hmm.
father, the parent. And then the other thing is to send Reiki to the relationship. And I've done that with Janaki and me, and it really has made a difference. It's been amazing. I did this about, I'm losing track of time, whether it was this past September or the one before it. But I had sent some Reiki to those early weeks of our relationship, and especially to the whole feeding thing and the, you know, the insecurity around that. And shortly after that, she and her roommate were going to do a Passover Seder at her house. They were hosting it. And she has allergies to wheat. And she was, at the very last minute, looking for wheat-free matzahs. So, you know, here it is, 9 o'clock at night, and I'm looking all over the internet for some place around the Bay Area that sells wheat-free matzahs that's open.
Right.
And I found a place in the city, and so I went over to, you know, drove over the Bay Bridge to the city and bought these things, just thrilled that I could feed her and know that she's getting something that's good, knowing that she's getting something that she wants and nurtures her.
Right.
And nurtures her body and her spirit. And she was so moved that I was willing to do that. And so I felt like there was a healing there and that our relationship feels easier now than it did before.
Uh-huh.
There's less of an edge and a tentativeness.
Uh-huh. Great.
Like it's completely gone, but it's way better.
That's great.
Yeah.
One of the things that I find quite interesting about this relationship between mother and daughters is that even though there is obviously connection, sometimes you really wouldn't call it love because of the way that it's expressed between the two people. And, you know, I'm just wondering in your sort of preparation about coming on the show and speaking about love, if you've considered that piece too, that, you know, there is always this kind of, seems like an organic, natural, step-by-step process that mother and daughters go through. And it's very powerful.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by a step-by-step process that mothers and daughters go through.
Well, it seems like that many mothers and daughters have a deep interconnection, and yet the relationship can be quite trying sometimes. Mm-hmm. And yet there are always these places of breakthrough, like you were just speaking of right now with Janaki, and that as the daughter grows older, quite often there is a point in time when that inner tension is released, and somehow then you can have a relationship as two women rather than a mother and daughter.
Hmm.
Not that the mother and daughter relationship ever goes away, but it becomes more easy, I would say.
Yeah.
I haven't thought of it as an overall mother-daughter thing, honestly. Thought of it in terms of the issues that prevent or that hide the feeling of love and the bonding.
Uh-huh.
For instance, my mother had difficulties because her mother favored her sister rather than her.
Uh-huh.
So she was constantly looking for her mother's love and never quite got it. You know, and then I had my issues because, you know, probably in part because that was handed down.
Uh-huh.
And I was mature. She had surgery when I was 4 days old. And there were other times, key moments, when she just wasn't around.
Uh-huh.
And to the point that ultimately she joined a cloistered convent. So,
excuse me? I don't know if I heard that correctly.
To hear it correctly, she joined a cloistered convent when I was a junior in college. Very unusual.
Very unusual.
Yeah. So there are, I feel there have been a lot of things that I've had to heal and that got in the way, that, you know, were like the clouds in the sky between my daughter and me.
Right.
And me, because of all that other stuff that came before that, you know, I had worked with, but there's still healing to do. So I tend to feel that what gets in the way is old pain on the part of the mother that
uh-huh.
needs to be healed, especially on the part of the mother
uh-huh.
that needs to be healed in order for the bonding to really take place. And the other thing is that I think the bonding is not between the personality of the mother and the personality of the baby. I mean, the best bonding, let's put it that way. The kind of bonding that really gives a sense of security to the baby takes place on a much deeper level. It's on the level of the love and the gratitude, the being present. This comes from this belief, this theory comes from something that I went through when I have the belief that before coming into the world, before incarnating, I, you know, set up for myself certain lessons to learn. Mm-hmm. So when I think of myself and, you know, well, why would I present myself with being a preemie, stuck in an incubator, my mother having surgery 4 days after I was born, my mother joining a convent, you know, blah, blah. What came to me is that it's for me to learn that the real source of support is the divine, whatever you want to call it, source, spirit, rather than an individual being. I mean, I was taken care of. I was fed, et cetera, in the nursery. It's just that I didn't have mom, you know, the love object I was expecting.
Right.
So I sent Reiki to myself back in time to the first, every day for the first 6 weeks of my life with the intention of feeling that divine presence every moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt a difference. I mean, I felt a difference in the moment of the Reiki treatments, where I started, I felt secure and safe, absolutely loved, comforted, nurtured. It's like the ideal view of a mother.
Right.
I felt completely not only surrounded, but perfused with that essence.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And then after that time period, I did feel a difference in my present life, that I'm not as easily overwhelmed, that when I face a challenge, I don't automatically go into why bother, the why bother syndrome. You know, that if I face a challenge and I can't go one direction, I go, okay, so now which way do we go? So I feel like the bonding, the best bonding is when the mother's issues can be healed so that the mother and the father, both parents really, can be present, you know, in that present moment that we were talking about earlier on,
right,
in love, and that's what the baby receives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so would you, I mean, I'm thinking about all of the listeners who are listening who have Reiki, and some who may be mothers, and some who, obviously, we all have mothers, and may want to begin a healing process not to find love, but to actually find a way to feel the love that's there. Maybe that would be more accurate. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely wonderful, and yeah, that's what it would be, is to be aware of the love, to be in the space of love.
Right, and that love comes from the divine, not another person.
Right.
Is that what you said? So, with Reiki, do you have a recommendation or a idea how people can just start? Because sometimes it's hard to know where to begin. Because it's so overwhelming, this feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on the situation. If a person has no idea where the difficulty lies,
right,
then I would just do Reiki on the relationship, you know, as a situation. Do Reiki on the relationship and see where that how what unfolds after that, and if somebody has a particular issue that they know of, for instance, you know, my being born premature, etc., you know, where you have a time frame,
right,
send it to, then you can send it to that time period.
And what about receiving Reiki treatments?
Yes. A very good idea. And, you know, with mental healings often, for me, emotional healings to, you know, feel the hurt from something or other, or to feel the love, you know, it can go, the approach can be either one.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, you know, you were speaking about that you're working with these mothers and children, and is it possible for you to actually treat the mothers and the babies?
Well, it is, and I haven't had a chance to do much of that because it's still quite new. And this is also for fathers. This actually isn't just mothers. We tend to go to mothers because that I think that's partly my story, and I think in general that's what people do, but it's also for fathers.
Well, that's great. I think that's wonderful.
But I recently met a woman who had a very, very difficult time with her baby. The baby's now a year old. The baby's fine. But she had breastfeeding problems. And every time she talked about that, those early weeks and months, she would tear up. So I'm in contact with her, and I'm looking forward to the time that we can actually do, you know, some Reiki together, so that I can support the healing of that pain.
Right.
Because I think it will also heal something in the baby. And if I get the feeling that it would be important to do Reiki for the baby directly, I'll do that, or for the relationship, I'll just kind of see how it goes, and follow my intuition in terms of what's needed. But I would start with the mother because that's where the obvious pain is. And then see what happens after that.
So would you say that Reiki is the divine? I mean, do you connect Reiki as a doorway to the divine, or would you say that it is the divine?
Oh, wow. What I have been saying is that it's divine healing energy. And I don't know whether one can separate divine healing energy from the divine.
Right. Well, that's a good question.
You know, I don't think you really can separate them. So I think I'm still too uncertain about what the divine is to be able to give a clear answer.
But that's beautiful because, you know, I think that in our lives we just are always searching for the answer to a lot of questions about the divine or spirit or Reiki, however we put it. And that it's such a mystery, and in some way it's what keeps us going as human beings, I think.
Yeah, I guess. It certainly keeps me keeps me going, keeps me questioning, I guess, is the word, you know, keeps me on my toes. I mean, I sometimes get complacent, and then something will happen, I'll go, where is God? What is the divine? Who am I? So I have my roller coaster ride with it.
Right, right. But, you know, I'm reading this kind of funny book. I'm not quite sure if I really like reading it or if I will continue. But there is this little girl, and she's being asked these philosophic questions about spirit and divine and about the mystery and how, you know, in the early days, you know, way before Christ and, you know, in all of our Aboriginal cultures, like the cultures that came from the earth, there are always these mythologies about how we came to be and why some years the crops fail and why sometimes the rain doesn't fall when it's supposed to and so on. And we lump all these things into mythology. But it's, you know, mythology, this book says, is a way to explain the divine. And the interesting sort of paradox about this is that the divine is not explainable.
Right.
So we conjecture all these mythologies about pseudo-human beings, you know, that we call gods, like Thor in the Scandinavian, or Apollo and his, you know, that whole pantheon, or, you know, in Egypt we have those gods, or, you know, depending on what your nationality is and where you connected to the anthropological, you know, source of your own humanness. I think that there's a really interesting process that comes with our trying to explain where the divine, what the divine is and where it comes from.
Yeah.
And in that, how love appears. Like, out of that, is love actually a product or a result of touching divinity? Excuse me. Or is it a human way of describing our connection with the divine?
Wow. I mean, who knows? When you were asking that question, what came to my mind were a couple of things. One is, I was raised Catholic, and there was a song that we used to sing that the word God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God and God in him, which I think is actually a quote from St. John's Gospel.
Right.
And it's something that I think about periodically, that God is love, and therefore love is God. Only I'm not sure that we know what love is, and I don't think that that's the only quality of God, you know, or that quality of love that is the divine also embodies all kinds of other qualities that we may not be thinking of at the moment we talk about love.
Right.
Yeah, but I think, you know, we may be surprised by some of them. They might not be only the really sweet ones. But I don't know. It's a mystery to me.
Well, I think that's a great statement, if you mean that love is a mystery to you.
Yes.
Yes. Wonderful. Well, this is a great place to end. Yeah, and did you want to say something else?
Not really. I just enjoyed having this conversation with you, and I hope it's useful to people who hear this talk and this conversation.
Oh, I'm sure that they will find it useful at some time in their life anyway. And I've been getting great reviews from some of the listeners about the programs recently. And, you know, I think that there's so much we don't know, and it's wonderful to just explore without having to come to any kind of decision or, you know, apply some kind of definitive answer to. That love is a mystery is a great way to end, and is certainly a great place to begin.
Great. Thank you, Phyllis. It's
perfect. Well, thank you very much, Siddheshwari. I really have appreciated your sharing your life so candidly, and your process with Janaki, and also your wonderful new way of being with Reiki. I think that that's great, and I would love to hear more about that later on when you get some experience.
I will let you know.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, listeners. We're going to end for the day. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.